Hello, this is Kathleen, and today, Friday, February 20th, I'll be reading to you from the Metro West Daily News. Holliston, Massachusetts mill space has become a magnet for foodies. Here's why. By Joanna K. Zouvelis from Wicked Local. Holliston. Madison Colantonio was just looking for a commercial kitchen where he could make ice cream. What he got instead is a nonprofit serving 15 food industry entrepreneurs that also offers cooking classes and a monthly supper club. Colantonio, 26, co-founded WSK with his sister Brianna, 33. Based in the Holliston Mill just off the downtown, the 509A2 nonprofit has two licensed kitchens available for rent by chefs, food entrepreneurs, and culinary enthusiasts. I did not anticipate the demand, said Colantonio, who lives in Cambridge. Housed in a 19th century revitalized shoe factory, WSK's 1,300-square-foot space allows up to two businesses to work and create their products. Among those doing so include Pincy Foods Lasagneria, which makes lasagna, Red Apron Charcuterie, charcuterie boards, Countryside Meat House, fresh sausages, and Colantonio's own business, Cara Cara Custards, frozen custard and sorbet. Part of WSK's mission is to bring the community together and inspire and educate through food, which is how its cooking school began. It was an immediate success. The first class offered in January 2024 and about how to make sourdough bread sold out. It was amazing, Colantonio said. WSK offers classes in pasta making, pickling and preserving, searing and braising, how to make ahead meals, a French pastry workshop, a sorbet science, ice cream making, and more. To learn more or sign up for a class, visit the thewsk.org/classes. Madison said he got the idea to start a supper club because he loves going to dinner parties. WSK offers its supper club once a month, which offers parties of up to six people, a five-course prefix dinner prepared by WSK tenants for $95 per person. The next event is Saturday, March 21st. With seatings scheduled for 5:30 p.m. and 7:45 p.m. To learn more or to make a reservation, visit thewsk.org/events/supper-club-32126. Colantonio hopes to grow WSK by gaining dedicated classroom space and an event space where more supper club dinners can be offered. I'd love to expand to the South Shore, he said. These black men from Natick, Massachusetts played a key role in American Revolution, by Norman Miller. As the British Redcoats retreated through Lexington on April 19, 1775, after the Battle of Lexington and Concord, two men, Cesar Ferret and his son John Ferret, both of Natick, took shelter in a nearby home and fired upon them. The Ferrets, spelled F-E-R-R-I-T, are among several black and indigenous soldiers who served during the American Revolution, fighting alongside white colonials to earn their freedom from England. According to Benjamin Remillard, a visiting assistant professor of history at Providence College, During the war, you got black and indigenous men contributing throughout, from the Battle of Lexington until the end of the war, Remillard said. They're doing the same thing as the white soldiers. They're fighting. They're sailors. They're spies. They were very important. The Ferrets were long settled in Natick by the time of the American Revolution started, according to Patriots of Color. African Americans and Native Americans at the Battle Road and Bunker Hill, by George Quintal. Cesar Ferret was born in 1720 on a Caribbean island. He claimed to have blood of four nations in his veins: Dutch, French, African, and indigenous Caribbean. It is not known when he moved to Massachusetts, but he married Naomi Isaac, a white woman from Boston, before settling in Natick in 1751. Isaac was cut off from her family, who opposed her marrying a black man. The couple had seven children. According to the Natick Historical Society, Cesar Ferret had deep roots in Natick. He had himself declared a Natick Indian and petitioned the general court to get permission to sell land several times. He sold several parcels of land to pay debts and build a house. His petitions demonstrate that he had many shared lived experiences with other residents of Natick after King Philip's War into the 18th century. According to an article written by Gail Coughlin for the Natick Historical Society, they also showcase one of the ways he fought to remain in a community where he felt accepted. When the call for arms came, Ferret and his son John answered and joined Captain John Morse's militia. Ferret's other son Thomas also served, but was part of a different unit marching from Dedham, according to Quintal's Patriots of Color. Cesar Ferret and his son John arrived in a house near Lexington, Meeting House, but a short time before the British soldiers reached the place on their retreat from Concord. According to an 1830 history of the war, quoted by Patriots of Color, these two discharged their muskets upon the regulars from the entry and secreted themselves under the cellar stairs till the enemy had passed by, though a considerable number of them entered the house and made a diligent search for their annoyers. At the time, there was considerable opposition from the colonial army to allowing blacks and indigenous people to serve, even if freemen, but they were eventually allowed to serve. There was some resistance from George Washington and the Continental Congress, but there was such a need for soldiers that resistance faded, Remillard said. Although Thomas Ferret served for just 2 days at the beginning of the war, Cesar and John reenlisted in 1775 and 1776 and 1781. According to the Natick Historical Society, John Ferret served in a secret expedition in Rhode Island in 1777. The Ferrets were two of 190 men from Natick who served during the Revolutionary War, according to the Natick Historical Society. It has never been recorded why the Ferrets chose to serve in the Continental Army. As the Ferrets risked their lives as soldiers multiple times, there is some probability that they felt some loyalty to the Patriot cause, according to the Natick Historical Society. Not much is known about the Ferrets after the war. Both sons married in Natick. Cesar Ferret died in 1799 at the age of 79. The United States has long been called a melting pot, formed and influenced by a great variety of cultures and experiences, according to the National Park Service Minuteman National Parks Collection. The Ferret's story illustrates that this cultural diversity predates the United States, and the contributions of mixed race and multicultural people are an important part of the struggle for independence from the beginning. Shrewsbury has four finalists for superintendent. Two familiar names on the short list by Jesse Collins from the Worcester Telegram and Gazette. Shrewsbury. The school committee has a short list of candidates as it searches for a replacement for departing Superintendent Joseph Sawyer. Superintendent High School Principal Todd Bezidlo and Calvin Coolidge Elementary School Principal Tiffany Ostrander are two of the four finalists. As the community is aware, Dr. Sawyer will be retiring at the end of this school year, and the school committee has engaged with a consultant to assist with the search process and form the Superintendent Search Screening Committee, Chair Aaron Boucher said during a committee meeting February 11th. There were 30 applicants for the position, a number that school committee member Sandra Freich, who is on the search committee, said was impressive for the community. We knew we were a desirable district, but to get that many applicants was gratifying. We were able to get a good pool to interview, Freich said on February 11th. I'm really happy with the slate that we are bringing forward. From the original pool, the search committee chose 9 of them to meet with the committee, and following that interview process whittled the field to 4. Bezidlo has been the principal of the high school since 2011, having previously worked as the assistant principal. Ostrander is a longtime member of the Shrewsbury Public Schools, having served as principal at Calvin Coolidge since 2017. Prior to that, she was the assistant principal of Floral Street School. Finalists from outside Shrewsbury include David Thompson, interim superintendent of Wilmington Public Schools. Thompson previously spent 7 years as the superintendent of Norwood Public Schools. He was named Massachusetts Middle School Principal of the Year in 2010, while serving as principal at Raynham Middle School. He is an adjunct professor at Worcester State University. The other candidate is Reuben Duncan, superintendent of Jaffrey Ringe Cooperative School District in New Hampshire, a position he has held since 2015. A former math teacher, Duncan has spent his entire professional career in New Hampshire. Sawyer, who has served as superintendent in Shrewsbury since 2009, announced he would be retiring at the end of the current school year back in October. At 16 years in the position, Sawyer is one of the longest tenured superintendents in the state. The 4 shortlisted candidates will be holding a meet and greet with the community over the upcoming weeks, with the district publishing the following schedule for each candidate. Tuesday, February 24th, from 5:45 to 6:45, Todd Bezidlo. Thursday, February 26th, from 5 to 6 p.m., Reuben Duncan. Friday, February 27th, from 5 to 6 p.m., Tiffany Ostrander. Monday, March 2nd, from 5 to 6 p.m., David Thompson. Each meet and greet will be held at the Beale Elementary School. Did your school get funded for a Credit for Life Fair by Beth McDermott? 92 Massachusetts schools recently received grants to hold financial education fairs for high school students, according to a community announcement. The grants, totaling $383,420, will fund so-called Credit for Life fairs at various high schools and special education programs throughout the state, according to the announcement. The fairs are designed to teach students essential financial skills as they prepare for adulthood. Of the first, the recipient schools, 24 are first-time participants. Additionally, 25 schools with a large population of low to moderate income students receive an extra $500 to support their fairs. Credit for Life fairs empower high school students with the tools they need to succeed, State Treasurer Deb Goldberg said in a statement. This year, we are supporting a record number of schools, helping young adults prepare to make informed financial decisions as they approach graduation and adulthood. Since 2015, more than 65,000 Massachusetts students have attended Credit for Life fairs, according to the announcement. The program is funded by the Division of Banks through a settlement over alleged unlawful lending practices. The Division of Banks is proud to support this initiative with another round of funding, said Mary Gallagher, Commissioner of Banks, in a statement. With a hands-on, high-quality lessons offered at these fairs, students can learn foundational financial management skills they can use into adulthood. Metro West and Greater Milford school districts who received funding include the following: Ashland High School, $3,200. Bellingham High School, $6,400. Framingham High School, $3,700. Hopedale Junior Senior High School, $3,200. Hudson Public Schools, $3,200. Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School, $3,200. Marlborough High School, $3,200. And Northbridge Public Schools, $3,200. FDA triggers peanut butter recall in 40 states, including Massachusetts, by Fernando Cervantes Jr. and Rin Velasco, USA Today Network, New England. If you have peanut butter in your Massachusetts home, it may be under recall. Federal officials say more than 20,000 peanut butter products sold across the United States are being recalled after possible plastic contamination was found during manufacturing. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration said the peanut butter was manufactured by Ventura Foods and sold under multiple brand names in 40 states. The recall was triggered after inspectors discovered pieces of blue plastic in a production filter. While the recall was first initiated in April 2025, the FDA classified it as a Class 2 on February 12th. That designation means using or being exposed to the products may cause temporary or medically irreversible health problems, and risk of serious injury is considered low. Here is what you need to know. What peanut butter products are being recalled? According to the FDA, peanut butter products being recalled include creamy peanut butter packets in sizes of 0.5 ounces and 0.75 ounce cups and 1.12 ounce packs. Twin packs combining creamy peanut butter with strawberry jam in 1.12 ounce and 1 ounce cups. Twin packs combining creamy peanut butter with grape jelly in 1.12 ounce and 1 ounce cups. The products were sold by private label brands such as U.S. Foods, DYMA Brands, Flavor Fresh, Cisco House Recipe, Katie's Kitchen, and Gordon Food Service, the FDA said. What states are affected by the recall? The recalled peanut butter was distributed to 40 states across the United States, including Alabama, Arkansas, Arizona, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Florida, Georgia, Iowa, Idaho, Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, Mississippi, Montana, North Carolina, North Dakota, Nebraska, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, Nevada, New York, Ohio, Oklahoma, Oregon, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Virginia, Washington, and Wisconsin. What should consumers do? Consumers who have peanut butter products at home should check the labels for manufacturing information. The FDA recommends following retailer or manufacturer guidance on whether recalled products should be returned or safely discarded. Anyone with health concerns after consuming the products should contact a medical professional. Majority believe people in power get a pass, poll finds. Files show Epstein had ties to prominent figures, by Jason Lange, Reuters, Washington. Americans believe that wealthy and powerful people are rarely held accountable. A new Reuters Ipsos poll found after the release of millions of records on the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein's connections in elite business and political circles. Some 69% of respondents in the four-day poll, which concluded on February 16th, said their views were captured very well or extremely well by a statement that the Epstein files show that powerful people in the U.S. are rarely held accountable for their actions. Another 17% said the statement described their views somewhat well, while 11% said it didn't reflect their thinking above. Among both Republicans and Democrats, more than 80% said the statement described their thinking at least somewhat well. Under congressional orders, the Justice Department has released trove after trove of documents that tie Epstein to a range of prominent people in politics, finance, academia, and business, both before and after he pleaded guilty in 2008 to charges including soliciting an underage girl. Epstein's 2019 death in a Manhattan jail cell following his arrest on charges of sex trafficking of minors was ruled a suicide. The scandal has proven a persistent political headache for President Donald Trump, who long fanned the flames of suspicion around Epstein and has been dogged by criticism that his administration was failing to fully disclose all the U.S. government knew about the case. The disclosures have started to affect prominent people. Executives at Goldman Sachs and Hyatt Hotels have resigned. Others have retained powerful posts. Trump's Commerce Secretary, Howard Lutnick, apparently visited Epstein's private island for lunch in 2012 and invited him to a fundraiser in 2015 for Hillary Clinton, Trump's Democratic rival in the 2016 presidential election, emails show. Dr. Mehmet Oz, Trump's administrator of the U.S. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, emailed an invitation to a Valentine's Day party in 2016 to Epstein, the Justice Department documents show. Neither Lutnick nor Oz is accused of wrongdoing. Trump, who socialized extensively with Epstein in the 1990s and 2000s, has denied any knowledge of the financier's crimes and says he broke off ties in the early 2000s, before Epstein's plea deal. While Americans generally have low expectations that elites will be held accountable, they are somewhat split along partisan lines on how much longer the nation should dwell on the Epstein affair. asked if their views were well described by that statement, that it's time for the country to move on from talking about the Epstein files. 67% of Republican respondents in the poll said this captured their thinking, at least somewhat well, while only 21% of Democrats said the same. The Reuters Ipsos poll, conducted online and nationwide, gathered responses from 1,117 U.S. adults and had margin of error of 3 percentage points. Officials probe possible criminal negligence over California avalanche. Investigators are working to determine if criminal negligence played a role in the avalanche that killed at least 8 people on a guided backcountry ski trip in California, but emphasized it is too early to determine if charges would be warranted, the Nevada County Sheriff's Office said on February 19th. The office, in a statement, said in addition to the coroner's death investigations, the Nevada County Sheriff's Office is also conducting a parallel investigation into whether criminal negligence was involved. It is cautioned that the investigation was in the preliminary stages and was too early to name a specific target of any possible charges. 8 people were killed and a 9th was presumed to have died when an avalanche in California's Sierra Nevada mountains swept over a group of skiers on February 17th during a 3-day backcountry trip organized by Blackbird Mountain Guides. It was the deadliest U.S. avalanche in 45 years. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you all have a safe and well day.